We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. This is a special edition of the podcast. We've been teasing it for like a month at this point, but Scott, we're finally getting to our 61 movie podcast review. This is going to be a podcast about a 16-year-old movie about a baseball season that happened 56 years ago. Are you ready?
Yes, I watched the movie again last week, and it had been probably 15 years since I've seen it. A lot of things I forgot about, I could tell you that much. So going back and looking at things and now knowing some of the other actors and like seeing them in other things, it's even stranger, I think, to see them in this older movie. So yeah, that's I got some good comments for this thing. Let's do it.
Do you think the movie holds up?
Yeah, I do. I think it was, you know, there were a lot of like cheesy parts that bother me. And yeah. You get that with sports movies, I think. While I think some of the better sports movies, they try to cut as much of that cheese out, but I think you need it sometimes to set up the plot and set up the whole story. Because I think one of the biggest bones to pick with this movie, I guess, is it's not geared to Yankee fans. And why would it be? Obviously it's a, you know, a national scene. But as a Yankee fan watching it, like some of the stuff I'm just rolling my eyes with the way that they portray some characters.
Yeah, so I think the best sports movies are movies that really put the actual game action on the back burner and talk right. more about the characters and stuff that goes on in the season or the life of a player, whatever it's focusing on. When the movies try and focus on the game action, you can never replicate live baseball or live football or whatever it may be. Boxing maybe is the only time where movies actually hold up to the actual action. So I thought the movie was good, especially when it was not focusing on what was actually happening on the field, which is kind of funny because it was very plot-driven by Maris's 61 home runs.
Yeah, but good luck going and finding an actor who not only can play the role of Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, and all these, but also look relatively athletic.
Yeah.
And throwing a ball and trying to hit, because that is not an easy task. Like, it drives me nuts when I see anybody in a movie or on TV or whatever, and they're playing some sort of athlete, and then you see them throw, and you're like, come on. can you please just, like, take some lessons and learn how to throw a damn ball before you go and play, you know, Mickey Mantle or Roger Maris? I think Mickey Mantle, had more athleticism than Barry Pepper with Roger Maris, but they were better than I think the majority of actors are in sports movies.
Yeah, like not that this is a sports movie and not that it really focused on the sport itself, but did you watch that FX O.J. Simpson thing with Cuba Gooding Jr.?
No, I didn't. The biggest overactor in Hollywood history.
Like, O.J. is this massive guy who was built like you wouldn't believe. He was a running back, and he was built even when the trial was going on, and then Cuba Gooding Jr. just shows up kind of puffy and fat. It's like, hey, you could have lifted one weight for me if you were going to play O.J. Simpson.
Yeah. See, that's the problem I have, and I think that I see that a lot in sports movies. The lack of preparation to actually play the sport or act like the athlete. What's his face? Will Smith did a hell of a job, I thought, for Ali. I thought he got pretty
jacked.
Big. Yeah, and he actually looked like Ali at that time. I thought that was a good job.
Yeah, can we agree boxing movies are the best sports movies?
Yeah, but I think that's the reason is because they can cut so fast and the action.
You can replicate.
Well, yeah, but you can also cut away fast so it looks like impact. And I don't know, there's more, I think, movie effects that you can do within boxing than you can do with a guy throwing a ball or trying to hit a ball.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's easier to Hollywoodify it.
Sure. Sure.
But yeah, I agree with that. The action scenes are much better in boxing, no doubt.
I liked how the movie got going. I liked that they took us right back to 1998. And obviously this movie was made in 2001, so 1998 was still fresh. I don't think Barry Bonds had broken the 98 record at that point. So McGuire was the home run single season champion at the time this movie came out. And it brought us right back with that Joe Buck audio and that footage at the old Cardinals Stadium. Brought me right back to 10 years old watching that summer.
Yeah, that summer was awesome. And then Sammy Sosa was there to give him the hug and the whole deal. I mean, that was such an exciting summer to watch baseball, too, because...
My favorite summer ever. No season, and I know all the steroid implications taint it, but nothing is ever going to top that for me.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. The battle between Sosa and McGuire was fun to watch.
We got a Twitter question from Nate at NJP584. He said, does steroids tarnish McGuire's 98 season? I think that's like the most rhetorical question ever, because
steroids tarnishes the entire era. I mean, but here's the problem I have with that is that he was giving, you know, he was giving interviews at his locker with a bottle of Andro sitting there and out in the open because it wasn't illegal at the time. Yeah. That's the only problem I have putting Mark McGuire in it, because it wasn't.
You think
Andro
was
substance.
The only thing he was doing?
It doesn't. Yeah, I get it, but I'm saying he wasn't hiding it.
He was laughably jacked.
Yeah. Oh, he's huge.
He was like, he looked like Paul Bundy. Like his waist, his shoulders were five times wider than his waist. He had no flexibility. It was hilarious to watch.
He's still that big, though. It seems like he's still that big.
And McGuire seems like one of the nicest guys. And I think that's, he was tearing up and he had the Maris family there and everything. But if you're the Maris family, you've got to be rooting against McGuire, right?
Yeah, but I think it was so much longer into the season that it didn't really, it wasn't worth it to root against him,
right?
Because he was going to get it.
A month ago.
He was going to get it, yeah.
What did you think of the old Yankee Stadium green screen?
I thought it was, I'm trying to think back at the time, like, you know, where technology was as far as movies at that point. Because I think, yes, well, you have to take it with a grain of salt. But I thought it was pretty good. You know, I didn't notice it being terrible. But I thought it was decent.
Yeah, it was decent. And like, I never saw the original Yankee Stadium. I've only seen it in pictures. But it's one of the things I wish I could just go back to and walk into the original Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's sort of part of the movie holding up is how does the technology, and like you said, it wasn't that bad.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think they had to do too much either as far as the technology. You know, you have your couple, you know, panoramics, and you have a few views of what you're looking at, but the action moves around so fast that you can't really keep your eye on it and notice if there's any like glaring defects, I think.
So the funny thing I found about this movie, and it's really mostly in the first, say, half hour of the movie, but you can totally tell it's made by a Yankees fan, Billy Crystal, because it pretty much just is like a 1961 Yankees trivia for the first half hour.
Okay, we talk about being cheesy and how these sports movies are cheesy. Before they even get to the part with Maris, you know, and they go back to when they were in real time back in 2000 or what was it, 98. They would talk like what the son would be like. They'd be like, "Hey, what are you holding there?" He's like, "Well, I'm holding Dad's bat." And like, you know, just like spelling every single thing out, like the conversations were so unnatural that it was just driving me nuts. I'm like, oh, this is just such a force. Like, I got to get this into the movie. So you say this,
you
say this,
you got to set the tone.
Yeah. But I don't think it was done very well. I don't think the writing was that strong, to tell you the truth. And then what you're talking about the trivia and getting into the characters and identifying who everybody is. I mean, come on. There are some of the things were just so ridiculous. Like, you got to make Mantle look like an asshole. Roger Maris looks like a yoke from the Midwest. Yogi Berra saying ridiculous things. You know,
spewed
it's like,
10 Yogi-isms in the first 30 seconds he was on TV.
Exactly. On TV. Oh, okay, that's Yogi Berra. We get it. You know,
I did not like the actor they hired to play Yogi.
Minus the ridiculous eyebrows on the actor that they played Yogi. Yeah, I don't know. He didn't do it for me either. I actually forgot that was Yogi throughout the movie when he's like in there, because he didn't feel like Yogi.
Well, Yogi's not a. I mean, Yogi should have a movie of his own. I mean, he shouldn't be the side character in a movie. So I almost would have rather just not even have them mention Yogi in this movie at all.
Yeah, the Yogi-isms being forced were pretty tough.
I did love when Mel Allen, who I have labeled as Bizarro Michael K, was just, like you said, going around the diamond. And it's like, who? At second base, we've got, and I don't even remember who the second baseman was, but Roger Maris in right field, the great Mickey Mantle in center field, Bob Serve in left field, which I found out with a little bit of research is not accurate, because the Yankees did not trade, or the Yankees traded for Bob Serve on May 8th, 1961. So there's no way he could have been there on opening day.
He wasn't there, you mean, being like, hey, Roger, look, it's Mickey. He's up at batting practice. Everybody turn your head and watch the great Mickey Mantle at batting practice. Yeah. And then Roger Maris going and like almost, you know, taking his season out by diving into the wall for a BP ball. Come on. Come on.
Do you believe that the writers on opening day asked them about the home run record?
Yeah, probably, because they were looking for stories. I mean, think about what we do now as far as, you know, going into the season. Like, you're looking for things to talk about. You're looking for – they don't have the luxury of social media and seeing off-season workout videos. You know, they have nothing basically going into but speculation and kind of forcing stories. The one thing that was driving me nuts, though, is that the writers were, like, on the field at the cage, like, talking to the dudes. I'm like, you know, this is – the one of my notes was when Roger Maris was writing or was out there hitting, taking batting practice, and Artie, whoever Artie is, the writer for the Yankees at the time, he's just sitting there like grilling him with questions while he's trying to get ready for the game and take batting practice. Like,
doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah. Can you please leave me alone? I'm trying to take batting practice.
Well, I actually think that was one of the more interesting parts of the movie, was the relationship between the writers and the players, and how writers legitimately controlled how fans perceived the players.
Right.
That, I mean, now with social media and so many avenues for players to reach fans, writers are no longer the main way that people consume the action and the personalities that are the baseball players. So they kind of probably had a holier than thou sense of reality, the baseball writers, because they were the go-to guys on everything that was going on.
Yeah, that's true. They were the liaison from the fans to the players. So the players almost had to have, if they wanted a good relationship and a good relationship with the papers and what was said about them, they had to kiss some ass, I think, with the writers. So it's interesting. And you're right. I bet they, because of that, they did have a lot more access to on the field stuff, or, you know, they were more sprinkled within the regular parts of the game, rather than now it's a lot more structured.
And that's probably, like you said, why they're scrapping for stories. That's why they kind of created the rivalry between Maris and Mantle out of thin air. Because assuming the movie is factually accurate from that standpoint, which I think it is, that Mantle and Maris were actually very close. But if you were a fan at the time and you read a number of those New York papers, you would have been led to believe that they hated each other.
Well, and that's an easy storyline to get to, right? Because Maris comes in and has an unbelievable season where Mickey, you know, still had a good season, but there's now another guy in there who plays, you know, a similar position in the outfield, who hits home runs, who is a middle of the lineup guy, who is taking some of that fanfare away and putting up some big numbers. So it is, if you're looking at it the outside, you can almost deem him as a threat to, you know, the great Mickey Mantle at that point. So I think it's a natural storyline.
Maris comes in first season, wins MVP for the Yankees, and then backs that up with 61 homers and another MVP.
Not too bad.
Maris is kind of lost in the I think because his time with the Yankees was pretty short and his dominance was short-lived.
Right.
But you got some big-ass balls on you to come into New York with Mickey Mantle on the team and win back-to-back MVPs.
Yeah. It just from the portrayal and the way that they had his character kind of labeled was that he just didn't think about that stuff. It seems like he was just so, I don't want to call it naive, but you know, carefree and so focused on just baseball. I mean, when he goes back and talks about, you know, when Mantle is sitting with him, he's like, you know, tell me something about yourself. He's like, well, you know, I was in North Dakota, and then I went and I played baseball. And
no, not your biography. Like, tell me something personal about yourself.
Yeah. But the funny thing is like, the biography was living in North Dakota, like being, you know, on the farm or whatever, playing baseball, then playing baseball, and I'm in New York. Like, that was it. That was his life. That was the only thing that happened to him, it seems like. It was, you know, the family in North Dakota, then he got out of there and played baseball. So, yeah. I don't know. He just seems like the kind of, I don't know, I picture Midwest people like that, I guess, on a farm, right? They put their head down and they work.
Well, it's funny because there's no bigger juxtapositions between Maris and Mantle, but Mantle was also a Midwestern guy. Isn't he Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Is he Oklahoma farm boy?
I don't know if that's – I guess that is considered – I don't know. I guess when you go northern Midwest.
Anything not in the on the coastline, I consider Midwest.
Yeah. I just – Oklahoma is more of like a – more southern to me. I don't know. They've got more of a southern feel than North Dakota and like Iowa and
– Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But what
those are like, you know, going eating potatoes and husking corn.
The thing, though, is – and you see this, I'm sure, with players today where you've got Mickey Mantle who thrives – under the spotlight. He wants to be famous, and the fact that he's famous for playing baseball, even better. And then you've got Roger Maris, who only played baseball because he was good at it, and that's, he just found himself there, and that he doesn't even want the fame. In fact, he'd rather not have the fame.
Yeah, he goes and lives in Queens in some, you know, tucked away neighborhood,
rinky-dink apartment
where nobody knows, you know, nobody cares what he is. And Mantle is sitting in Times Square in some, you know, in some like ridiculous hotel and just getting treated like a rock star. I mean,
the playboy
damn.
That he is.
Damn.
And the movie set the tone right away for Mickey with the quote, "I like women with small hands, makes my dick look bigger." Like, I think that was the first thing he said.
Well, yeah, because they had to make sure that you knew that Roger Maris was the nice guy from North Dakota, and Mickey Mantle was the guy that says, "Hey, look at me, the playboy New York baseball player that loves the spotlight." He's kind of a dick.
He's got a point with the small hands thing.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt.
The movie, as we said, the movie is just like a setup for the first 20-30 minutes of it all.
Yeah.
But that, like you said, also setting the tone with Ford Frick, the then MLB commissioner, who loves Babe Ruth. You'd think he was his own son. That's how much he loved him. Immediately just setting the expectations that if the home run record is broken, he's going to slap an asterisk on it because of the expansion and the extra schedule and all that kind of good stuff.
It's funny because Babe Ruth was the guy who brought baseball to the forefront. He was the big... obviously the almost a godlike figure and took the game to new heights. So he did whatever he wanted because he was bigger. I mean, they say nobody's bigger than the game, but Babe Ruth was bigger than the game almost because
totally,
this guy literally, you know, you see him walking around with those fur coats and like, it's ridiculous. The stuff that he would wear. And
I have
how
a hard and fast rule. My rule is if you out homer other teams, you're bigger than the game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, so I can understand why the commissioner was kissing his ass and kissing the legacy's ass as well, because that's what people knew. That's what people loved. That's why people loved baseball, was because of Babe Ruth. You got some guy who nobody knows about coming in and trying to take it back then. That's just not welcomed. Can't sit here.
I feel like
I got to talk like an old time radio guy. And that's what I felt like the entire movie.
Yeah. Like the way Mal Allen was talking.
Yeah, Huckleberry's out there trying to break Ruth's record.
Or as you would call him, Shooter McGavin.
That's all I saw the whole movie was Shooter McGavin. I couldn't take my eye off Shooter McGavin the entire time.
Yeah, there's certain roles that you take, and then that's just your persona for the rest of your life.
Do you know his name in real life?
Not a damn clue.
No, but he's in a million things, but he'll always be Shooter McGavin.
What is his real name? Do you know it?
No idea.
So, one thing I wrote down when they said it was that Maris's salary was $38,000. And that give or take a few bucks equals what Jacoby Ellsbury makes per at bat.
Oh, that's disgusting. That's the real shame right there that the Maris family needs to be upset about is that Jacoby Ellsbury is making that.
I remember, I forget what I was reading or where I heard this, but Joe DiMaggio, when he asked for, I think it was like a $3,000 raise, the Yankees were like, no chance. And it's talking about Joe DiMaggio for a $3,000 raise.
Yeah, and you want them to give $3 million to Dylan Betances. Come on, it's crazy.
Hey, times have a change.
They won't
Scott.
Even give $3,000 to the DiMaggio, and Betances has the balls to go and ask for $3 million. Know your history, kid.
That's what they should, the Yankees. If I were the Yankees, I would just use that for anyone who goes
forever.
In and asks for more money. Hey, look, Joe DiMaggio didn't get $3,000. What makes you think you're going to get $20 million?
Yeah, exactly.
How about Maris? So I looked up. So Maris had 3 home runs through 25 games into the season, and that's a really slow pace. And he ended up with 61. That's insane. He didn't get going until games 29 through 32 when he hit four home run straight games.
Yeah, that's it. I think it makes it even more impressive when you see how slow of a start he got out to, and just how lights out. And you know they weren't pitching to him towards the end of it as well. I mean, he was getting. He had to do a lot of that on his own. I mean, if he had a good pitch, he had to take it out because he wasn't going to get very many of them. And I guarantee that was kind of a – they touched on it a little bit in the movie about talking about, hey, is he going to get pitches? But I don't think they touched on it enough because I guarantee throughout the season, you know, as he's approaching 40 and then 50, like that was going through and talked about on every opponent and every game plan for the pitcher. I guarantee it was talked about.
Well, they made a big point about when the shift happened in the lineup, switching Maris and Mantle 3-4,
right,
and putting Maris 3, Mantle 4. Mantle was having an unbelievable season as well, so Maris was getting all the pitches, at least through the first 3 quarters of the season until Mickey got that alien shot in his ass from Mel Allen's doctor and had to go to the hospital.
What is the deal with Shooter McGavin going in and giving the herpes shot to Mickey Mantle? I mean, that thing got bad fast. It was like
it was like an
African disease.
You think that really happened?
I think he shot him up with an African disease. Yeah, it was terrible. What was that shot, though? That's what I want to know.
Who knows? I just love how you're taking – they're allowing Mickey Mantle, their best player, their franchise player, to just take doctor advice from the broadcaster.
Yeah, and not only, but here's,
like,
here's my question.
Imagine if Susan Waldman is waltzing through the clubhouse and handing Derek Jeter.
It's Roger.
Like a prescription.
The big question I have is, like, yeah, it went bad. We saw what happened. It went bad. But what was it? What was the intended shot supposed to do?
Sounds like
HGH to me. I don't know.
Sounds HGH something. Wasn't a thing back. Don't start rumors.
I'm just saying it sounds like it. You know, trying to heal an injury, trying to get back faster. Sounds like it.
I did when I watched this movie and wrote the blog back like 6-8 months ago. I did some research, and that was one of the things. And I could not find anything on what that shot really was.
Uh huh. Telling you, it was some unlabeled nonsense from the horse farm in Oklahoma.
Are your sensors going up? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying I'm wondering what that shot was. I mean, I think what happened with it was probably a bad needle. I don't know.
They forgot to disinfect the needle.
I think it was a bad needle. Yeah, and I think he got herpes in the leg.
That needle was previously used for some homeless bum in the Bronx, and then they just stuck it in Mickey Mantle's butt.
Yeah, I mean, that's. There it didn't seem like he really cared. He was just going to get the magic shot. Pretty unbelievable.
I like to think about what if Mickey Mantle never had all those injuries and didn't have the alcohol problem and wasn't partying all night every night. And they kind of talked about. Do you remember the scene in the movie when they're on the road trip and they're in that bar? And DiMaggio, they find out DiMaggio's thrown out the first pitch like in a couple days.
Yeah.
And Mickey starts to freak out.
Yeah.
And then one of the other players was talking about how in the 51 World Series, Mickey tore up his knee because Casey Stengel told him to catch everything in the outfield because Joe DiMaggio couldn't run anymore.
Right.
And you always hear the story about the
sprinkler head
in Yankee Stadium. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who watched Mickey Mantle in those days said that if he never shredded his knee and never had all those injuries, like he basically was playing, even in his best days, he was playing at like 75%. And they just wonder what he would have been if he was 100% or had modern medicine.
Well, according to the movie, too, I mean, if you just look at the time where he moved in with Maris, if that's even 100% true, but he went.
No, that is true. I fact checked that.
Yeah. So he went and he lived with Maris on like the straight and narrow for a while. He cleaned him up, made him, and he had a great season. You know what I mean? So like it's very, look, for what anybody else thinks, maybe it makes for better podcasts, but alcohol does not usually make for better sports and athletic athletic
it's
achievement.
It's a PED for podcasts, but not, yeah. not for baseball.
Exactly. So the fact of, if we're talking about, would Mickey Mantle have been even better without the drinking problem in the late nights and going out? Yeah, I think he would have been, you know, I don't know about the numbers. They probably would have been close, but the longevity, and obviously he would have been on the field a lot more often. And yeah, I mean, he was a special player while doing all this stuff and being injured. So the sky was the limit with it. But you know what? That was part of Mickey Mantle, I guess.
Yeah. I was watching one of those MLB Network. Do you remember those MLB Network top nines where they would do the nine best players at each position, like over the course of history?
Yeah.
And it was center field. And obviously, I think they ranked Willie Mays one and Mickey Mantle, I think, might have been three and Joe DiMaggio two. But one person talking about Mickey said that when you were watching on their best days, Mickey Mantle was better than Willie Mays on any given day when he was healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense if you look at what he did while not healthy. I mean, the diagram, you know, it's a famous picture. Just Google it if you haven't seen it. But the Mickey Mantle diagram of his injuries is insane.
Yeah,
of the map of his body, and then there's just like all sorts of lines coming out of it and talking about how many injuries. I think it was in Sports Illustrated or something.
I remember that. Yeah, he's on the crutch, right? It's like that game. What was that game? Operation.
Operation. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was an unbelievable amount of injuries that the guy played through, and he played through a lot of them. That's the crazy thing. I mean, you know how many times he would have been on the DL now if he had those same injuries? I mean, he wouldn't have been playing half the time.
Yeah. Look at speaking of the one guy we just mentioned, Jacoby Ellsbury.
Yeah. I mean, Jacoby Ellsbury would not have been on the DL for 95% of the injuries that he had then.
So you remember the car accident, which was sort of like the straw that the last straw, or how does the saying go?
The straw that broke the camel's back.
When he had that car accident and they had, Whitey Ford. I love how also they portrayed Whitey Ford as just like literally, like by definition, chairman of the board, which is what his nickname was.
Right.
But that was sort of like the last straw before Maris had to be like, all right, Mickey, you got to calm the hell down.
Yeah, Mickey, I don't know. I don't know. Don't look too good. I just can't. The way that they talk is so ridiculous. And the way that if Maris actually talked like that about how calm his demeanor was and like how non-confrontational he was until he got like pushed to the absolute limit when he's getting like death threats. But Whitey Ford is just like throwing money. He's just like throwing money at people.
Yeah.
Like, thank God social media is not around.
He's making it rain on all of the people that witness Mickey Mantle being a drunk asshole.
Oh, and you're not going to say anything and throws like a couple hundreds at him.
Who's funding that? I want to know.
Who's not taking that money and then going to the paper and cashing that and doubling down?
That's true. But you know what? A lot of those writers, papers didn't want to write it because then they would lose access.
You're right. Yeah, so that's kind of a nice system, though.
Yeah, Mantle was essentially a made man with the media.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad situation to be in.
No, I think it's a good situation. I like the way that that works, because then these guys stay on the top of folklore and they stay on posters, and you know, no kids have to have conversation, or no fathers have to have conversations with their kids about these guys, because it's all tucked under the rug.
That still exists, though, but at least you have
to a
small extent, but at least you have a lot of writers and a lot of media people and blogs like us that will say if something like that, like if obviously you couldn't even hide it now. If Mike Trout crashes his car because he's drunk, you can't hide that now. That's all over the front pages of every sports section tomorrow.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's been things that we've gotten, though, that we have not reported.
Because
we're
not 100% sure that they're actually accurate.
I have 100% facts that I have not put out there about certain people in the organization. But there's the reason you do that is because if you are the guy that puts something out there that really doesn't want to be out there, then you lose credibility a lot with that player. And with the people around it, and what does that do for you in the future? It does a lot of bad things. So you still have to kind of balance if it's worth it. Yeah.
So they bring Mickey back to his hotel at the St. Moritz, which is like the Ritz-Carlton, just hadn't been called the Ritz-Carlton at that time. And do you remember the hotel manager kind of complaining that Mickey's bringing broads back at all hours of the night?
Yes.
It made me think, do you remember when A-Rod got kicked out of Trump Tower because he kept bringing hookers in?
Yeah, I remember the stories.
And his neighbors were complaining because he had a train of hookers just all hours of the night. This was like 2011 A-Rod when he was his most irritable.
Man, what happened with that? That was a good A-Rod, I feel like. You know, the guy that brings in hookers.
That was the A-Rod that we hated.
No, the guy that brings in hookers, I don't mind. That guy who's out there just doing things out in the open and people know about it. Like that's something I'm okay with.
Well,
I like that. I like that part of it. Not that I condone getting hookers by any means, but so, for whatever reason, that makes me like A-Rod better.
We like Kate Hudson A-Rod because that was when he won a championship in 09 when he was dating Kate Hudson. And then he moved on to Cameron Diaz. You remember the popcorn situation?
Yeah, I just don't understand Cameron Diaz on the Cameron Diaz stuff. I don't get that. I don't think she's that great.
You don't think she's that hot?
No, I can't stand her stomach. Her stomach bothers me. It really does.
Your stomach guy?
Well, with her, I'm an anti-stomach guy because it doesn't look like a woman's stomach. I don't know.
If you haven't noticed, A-Rod has a type.
I don't know. Does he? He's been all over the map.
He's got a type.
A-Woj?
Cameron Diaz, Madonna.
A-Woj? How do you go to Madonna to A-Woj?
Well, A-Woj was for her business acumen. He was picking her brain.
And her science.
Do you remember her medical science prescription drugs?
Yes.
Do you remember also when he was pictured in his backyard with those female bodybuilders?
No, I don't remember. No, I don't remember that. He dated what's her face? Tori Watson, is that her name? She was a WWE chick.
Okay, I don't remember that part, but what I'm getting at A-Rod's type is muscular.
Okay, besides A-Woj.
Right.
And Kate Hudson.
We don't even know if he's still dating her, though.
No, I don't think he is. There's just way too many Instagram stories out there without A-Woj for them to be an item still.
Yeah. We got a Twitter question from Matt Luck at DC5Goon89, and he says, in 61, Mickey Mantle eats the nasty eggs before games as a ritual. What are the weirdest rituals you guys have heard of? So this was after he moved in with Maris and Serve in that Queens apartment, in that two-bedroom Queens apartment for three Major League Baseball players. You know, when you're making $38,000, you can't afford luxury accommodations. You got to stay in Queens if you're Roger Maris.
Yeah, you got to keep it. You know, look, that's balling money, and it's just the money doesn't make the man. He's very humble, very humble. Got to stay in Queens and just not flash that 38K.
But those green eggs, which didn't really look that bad to me.
I mean, how bad can you make eggs? I don't really understand that unless he's putting some other foreign substance in these eggs. Back on the foreign substances, I don't know. I mean, they made him hit home runs too. What was in them that made them so disgusting?
Well, you see, back in the 50s and 60s, everything was organic. I mean, there was no added preservatives in all of our food. Our chickens weren't on steroids, so everything was better for you. That's why the eggs made them hit home runs. Now, with all factory farming and everything, right?
Natural protein right there.
Yeah.
Tori Wilson is the chick I was talking about, by the way.
Is she muscular?
Yeah, she's actually very attractive. I think he should have stayed with her for the duration, to tell you the truth. I don't know what went bad there.
Tori Wilson?
Tori Wilson. It seems like a perfect match, in all honesty. Perfect match. Yeah. I think we should get A-Rod back on the Tori Wilson train. I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, she is hot.
Yeah.
What's the weirdest rituals you've ever heard of? One that comes to mind is Wade Boggs would only eat chicken and rice pilaf, I think it was, before games.
Yeah, I think you get a lot of those types of things about certain, superstitions that, you know, people, they don't launder their clothes. They go and they eat the same things. I think what it comes down to is if somebody has a good day, they kind of remember what they did that day, and then it just repeats until that runs out. So I can't think of anything like completely crazy off the top of my head, but there have been weird ones.
Were you superstitious like when you played high school ball or anything like that?
Not really. I think I'm probably more superstitious now than I ever have been. So,
like, as a fan, like, you, if you sat like in one chair and the Yankees had like a walk off win, like, you'll sit there the next night type of thing.
Well, when I was in college and going into when I was in like my 20s, that was a definite thing. Like, I would not leave a specific part of the couch, and I would drink like the same beer. It's, you know, college problems here, but I would do the exact same thing. Yeah, like that was absolutely a thing, and I would make sure that the same people were at my house. I wouldn't let anybody else come over. There were jinx people there, you know, that's a thing, I think. But I don't know. I think, like, when I played baseball in like some of the summer leagues in college, and then after college, I would do a lot of the, you know, we would literally, this is terrible. We would drink before the game a little bit. Yeah. So
just a little bit, just a little buzz going.
Almost like every Sunday there would be Rebel Vodkas going on in the parking lot before we started play the game.
Well, that's good. You're getting the energy while you're getting the buzz on.
Yeah. A couple times I had to get taken out of first base because I couldn't see the ball.
Getting your B12. Getting your daily maximum amounts of B12 before you go out there. Yeah, there's vodka too, but...
Yeah, know, yeah. It's the good vodka was a... I'll never forget the day that I took myself out of the game because I couldn't see the ball.
Tapping out like running backs do when they're gassed.
I got to go sit down.
I tweeted this when I was watching the movie the other night, but do you remember when Marissa Mantle formed the M&M Corporation? I mean, the first thing I thought of was A-Rod Corp.
There could have been some inspiration there. I mean, if you're going
definitely
at
definitely some inspiration there. I feel like A-Rod watched the movie and then was like, hey, that's a good idea.
A-Rod Corp, yeah. You know, the M&M boys, it was interesting to me when they had that, and then they, you know, they were showing like some of the things they were doing with the corporation, but at the end, Mickey's like, you know, you take all the money, you do whatever you want, you take everything, and just giving it to Mary. So it was almost like a pity thing, like he felt bad for him so badly that he was just going to give him everything. I don't know. I felt that was kind of a slight, and I don't know if I would have taken it as well.
I don't know if it was a slight. So Mantle,
it was pretty condescending.
See, I took it the opposite way. I think Mantle. I almost think Mantle looked up to Roger Maris as far as like the type of person and type of family man and type of father he was.
Right.
And Mantle knows he was not capable of that. I mean, he couldn't even be in the same city as his own family. I think part of him wanted to be, but he just couldn't. So I think he actually did look up to Roger Maris in that sense. And I think he probably knew he needed the money more than he did. I mean, Mickey Mantle was given everything. He didn't have to pay for anything in that city. That wasn't how Roger Maris was treated.
No, I know that. And I don't think it was more, I don't think it was intentional. I just feel like the notion, I don't know. If you're a man and you're going out and someone who is, you know, has the better job, or the guy that is doing better in a similar situation and starts giving you things, I don't know. I guess it's like a manhood thing where like a guy is just trying to, it's almost like a charity case at that point. I don't know. It took me as a little twist, and I think Maris, even in his response, was, you know, a little standoffish because he didn't want that. He's got that Midwest pride, you know what I mean? He doesn't want the handouts.
Yeah, I think he said something like, "Well, there's no M&M without you. I mean, you're half of the M&M.
Right, right. So you're entitled to half of the money. I mean, that's just the deal.
So the movie goes on. They're both killing it. They're both living. Well off the field. They're both crushing the ball on the field. The papers, and do you remember them kind of joking, like they were watching the TV, the news, and then some, like the broadcaster was like, "And I'm hearing about a feud between the M&M boys," and then Mantle looks at Marison's like, "Are we feuding?" And Roger's like, "Yeah, I guess so." They were kind of joking about it.
Yeah, I think they're trying to get as many storylines as possible during this. Did they not understand that they were living together at that point? That's what I don't know if that was public information, because obviously they're trying to, you know, or Maris and Maris was trying to like protect him or, you know, shelter Mantle from himself basically, and from society and all of the temptations around him. So I'm curious to see if that was private while it was going on. If he didn't really tell anybody where he was living or the fact that he was living with Maris.
Yeah. No, it's
because
just,
obviously then that would be a ridiculous statement.
Obviously. But I think they bonded over going after Babe Ruth, right? Because what Mickey wasn't he saying, we're in his house, the fat fuck is everywhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think they were bonding over over chasing Ruth, whereas the public perception may have been, and we saw it, right? Because there was that that time, it was in Detroit, I think, or something, where the fan threw the chair at Roger Maris.
Yes.
So, I mean, clearly all the fans were rooting for Mickey Mantle, and it was 1,000% because of the narrative these jackass baseball writers were writing.
Well, and the fact that Mickey Mantle was the guy for so long.
He was the homegrown guy.
Yeah, and nobody wants to see someone come in and take out your guy, which I don't get sometimes a little bit. You know, look, I try to picture myself as a Yankee fan and who, you know, the heir apparent. And I think maybe Didi has like a very small bit of this because of Derek Jeter and the lore of Derek Jeter and coming in. I mean, he's the Mickey Mantle of then, right? And you got a guy coming up behind you. Granted, he was the year after, but still that pressure's there that you have to live up to that. And I don't know if they were necessarily – there wasn't like a time to like say goodbye to Mantle at that time before Maris came. It's almost like he came a little early, because if he had come after Mantle had retired, it would have been a totally different story. He would have been the next guy.
Yeah.
And he would have been the next great outfielder of the New York Yankees. I mean, maybe he just missed his opportunity by 2 years to become that really, really like endured guy that the Yankees fans loved, which –
But I think part of it was he didn't want to be that.
Yeah, but I know. But if you're not, if you don't want to be that, and but yet you're still hitting the ball like you are, and Mantle's not even there, you're gonna be that. And who knows what happens then? Maybe he starts to embrace it. Maybe he starts to go out and live life a little bit more and enjoy the good life, because people are giving him that attention and they're not writing, you know, die Roger,
the
die.
The hate mail he got, like, I felt terrible for him. Remember, he was shaking and his hair was falling out and he was smoking like 5 packs of cigarettes a day.
So the one of the big things that I, like, first of all, the Yankee fans were way over the top. I mean, can we, like, hello, this guy is doing very well.
I'm sure that's slightly dramatized for movie effect, but I think that's really how it was back then.
I'm saying that the Yankee fans were over the top. They were over the top for the way that they treated this guy. Like, I don't understand such hatred for a guy that's producing for your team. Like, it's Babe Ruth that they didn't want to break the record, and then at the same time, it's Mickey Mantle. If someone is going to break the record, it's got to be this guy.
See, I'm bringing it back to the media. Because there's only one outlet to these players, the only perception that these fans got was through the media, and the media was 1,000% slated towards Mickey Mantle. So imagine if it's like in North Korea, right? You get Kim Jong-un's extreme radical outlook on the government, and he feeds you all of this propaganda. That's essentially, I know I'm slightly exaggerating, but it's essentially what these writers were doing. It was propaganda.
So this is one of the biggest problems I have with watching the story and seeing what unfolded. This is one of the biggest issues I had. Why didn't Mantle, while he was living with Maris, had a very good relationship with Maris, they essentially bonded over this whole thing. Why didn't Mantle, knowing his position in New York, knowing his stature with the media, why didn't he stand up and say something and call the dogs off? Why didn't he tell the Yankee fans? Because you know damn well they would have listened to him.
100%.
If Mantle had said in the middle of that season that he supports Roger Maris, you guys need to relax, we're going for one thing, if it happens, it happens, if it doesn't, it doesn't, but we're going to fight our butts off, the two of us, and we're going to go after this thing, because that's what we're paid to do. If he goes out and says something like that to the Yankee fans, totally different scenario.
Yep.
Why doesn't he do it?
They buy in hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah,
if he does that.
So why doesn't he do it?
I don't know. Why didn't Derek Jeter say that about A-Rod when A-Rod was going through his struggles?
Because A-Rod's an asshole. Roger Maris is like the nicest guy in the world.
Okay. Touche.
A-Rod's bringing in hooker trains. Okay.
I did like when Mel Allen kept cutting off Phil Rizzuto. Do you remember that? Every time Phil Rizzuto tried to get a word in edgewise, Mel Allen would just talk over him. It reminded me of Ranch Wilder and Angels in the Outfield.
You and your Angels in the Outfield. I don't even know who the hell you're talking about.
He was
can't
the
picture.
Broadcaster who kept cutting off the his color commentator.
Okay, I mean that's a very common storyline with commentators and color guys in any movie. I mean, like, do you think of Dodgeball with that always happens quite a bit. One guy like overshadows the next guy. I didn't like how they portrayed Rizzuto, to tell you the truth. I didn't like the the actor well, that played Rizzuto
every time,
either.
Every time he said something, he had to make sure he said "Holy cow."
Yeah, yeah, and he didn't say it right either. I don't know. I didn't like the portrayal of Scooter. Maybe that's just because I'm a big Rizzuto guy, yeah. But.
I always remember the Seinfeld episode when George's keychain with Phil Rizzuto, "Holy cow," gets planted into the cement. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
Another thing I wrote down was when Mickey hit the Roy Hobbs one-armed home run.
Yep.
Like, that didn't actually happen, right? First of all, how does he like break his forearm on a check swing? How does that happen?
I don't know. That's a lot of power. That's a lot of inertia. That's beyond. That's over my head. That's some green eggs and a magic shot from Mel Allen. That's all you need to fix that.
Yeah, I really want to know what Mel Allen, like, that is the biggest question I have coming out of this movie.
The shot.
What happened with the shot from Mel Allen?
Did that actually happen? Yeah. And yeah. Did he give him like a bad dose of something? And why did Mel Allen send him to a guy? Why did he send him to Dr. Doom? Because that's essentially what it was.
If you're a Yankees fan, you gotta be blaming Mel Allen for Mickey Mantle having to sit out the rest of the season.
No doubt. But nobody knew that. And maybe that was a storyline that was made up. I don't know. I don't know how you even fact check that. Maybe somebody wrote about it at some point. We should look that up. We probably should have already looked that up. But
no, look it up. I can't find anything on it. So I Googled it like the hell out of it for 10 minutes when I was watching the movie. I could not find anything on it. If anyone knows anything about that whole storyline of 1961, tweet us at Yankees Podcast.
All right, I'm searching Mel Allen HGH. And it came up as Mel Allen gay. Asking me if that's what I meant. No, that's not what I meant.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So at this point in the movie, they basically get down to like the final couple weeks of the season. Maris is going for the record. Ford Frick, who is a giant prick, figured I'd just slip that little rhyme in there, is already setting the tone for the asterisk. And he doesn't want to go to Baltimore for games 154,
mm-hmm.
which is when Maris would have had to tie it. Now, again, this is sort of the movie making it more convenient for telling a movie. But that's not exactly how it happened. I guess how it happened is Maris was going for the record in Baltimore, but it wasn't on game 154. They played a doubleheader, I guess. So that's when he was going for it. But obviously the movie didn't get into all that.
Yeah, you have to make it convenient, I think, for a trip to be planned or and not go. It's I don't know. You know, the whole thing, like, at that point, you're still not over it and you're still not going to embrace it. To me, like, if I think he messed up with the entire, you know, asterisk thing at that point. Yes, Babe Ruth was a big deal, but at the same time, you could set the tone as the commissioner, and I'm sure that they had complete control over the writers at that point too. Like, they had a lot of thumbs on the writers. I bet baseball and the writers had a very different relationship than the players and the writers did, because I feel like if baseball said something to the writers at that point, then it was more of a mandate. You know what I mean? So they could have set a tone with, okay, you know, we love Ruth, we're going to celebrate Ruth, we're going to celebrate this, but now is the time where the M&M boys are trying to break this record and we're moving forward and records are meant to be broken. And he just completely missed the narrative on that, and all of that packaged up together made the nice guy from North Dakota just, like, you know, be the villain to everybody.
There was a quote in the movie that really stuck out to me, and the quote was, "If the record is to be broken, it should be by someone of greater baseball stature."
Right.
And I think that is kind of telling, right? That's what the commissioner and the writers were thinking, is that Maris was not worthy of breaking Babe Ruth's record. Whereas if you flipped the position and Mantle was going for it, I think they would have fully embraced it.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably...
Because
that's probably
Mantle is, quote, worthy enough to break the record, but Maris wasn't. And it kind of got
me
thinking.
From what the movie is saying, though, I mean, the narrative was started before it was only Roger Maris who was ready to go, right? I mean, they were still in a dogfight to see who was going to get
right.
to it.
No,
and
but
it seemed
this
like
was,
that narrative was set from the beginning.
This was right at the end when he didn't get home run number 60 in the...
as it happened. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As it happened. They were saying that Maris is not essentially not worthy.
So does Roger Maris hit hit the home run in the 154 games if he's not smoking five packs of cigarettes a day? you know, I mean, like everybody has
their
vice.
Or if he doesn't face Hoyt Wilhelm.
Hoyt Wilhelm, the guy who looked like a, what did I write down? I said the 60s version of Fernando Rodney. He looked like with his hat. I've never seen a guy from the 60s with their hat sideways. I mean, like that guy's exiled, right?
Well, it's like the producer of the director of the movie was like, how do we make this guy look as menacing as possible?
Yeah, he looked like a common crook. I mean, there's no doubt. A knuckleball. Oh, yeah. How many knuckleball relievers are there out there, too? Tell me that. That's an anomaly in and of itself.
So that is a point that is factually accurate. In his final at bat in game 154, he did face knuckleballer Hoyt Wilhelm.
As a relief pitcher, did he come in as a relief pitcher or is he a starter?
He brought him in. He brought him in as a relief pitcher.
But he's a starter, right?
Lum Harris, yeah.
Okay.
So it was a total, so I said this, it was a total Buck Showalter move. That's something that Buck would have done.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Knuckleball just to screw the guy up. I mean, that's it, man. I'm telling you. And I guarantee he was getting that before that game. I mean, he was getting all sorts of, you know, terrible looks. And
pressure. He's probably getting pressure to... The Orioles manager was probably getting pressure from the MLB commissioner's office.
Flick the prick is laying it down. Yeah, he was laying down the pressure. The thumb was being pressed on every baseball owner across that was facing the New York Yankees.
So he gets it in the final game of the season with like a half-empty Yankee Stadium.
That's so terrible.
Do you remember the owner of the Yankees was like, "How is the stadium only half full? What is going on here?" I mean, the tickets would be going for $5,000 a piece if someone was going for the home run record now. I mean, do you remember when Barry Bonds was going for it? You couldn't get like StubHub was going insane for those tickets.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember the out in McCovey Cove, like how many kayakers were out there?
Thousands of kayaks.
It was ridiculous.
Sal Durante caught it and then sold it, I guess. Roger, being the nice Midwestern boy that he is, just said, yeah, you can have the ball.
A-Rod, you sell it. You need the money more than I do. See, he moved on the condescending tone to another commoner. It just trickled downhill.
That doesn't happen. Now players are all concerned about memorabilia now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They want the ball.
A-Rod buying it back from foul ball guy. God, I can't speak.
There you go. It's okay. It's, you know, I think it's funny, though, the way that like they're on like a pedestal taking pictures and like he's just hanging out with them. Derek Jeter, I think that there was like pictures in like the alley, very very controlled pictures of.
Oh yeah,
of
what was
that?
Do you remember that kid's name?
I can't remember. I can see his face right now. He was a big dude.
He was a big guy.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
61 was a bad year for Babe Ruth records. Not only did the 60 home run record fall, but Whitey Ford in the World Series that year broke his scoreless inning streaks of 29.2 innings.
Yeah, I mean, it all has to go down at some point. His wife did not seem very happy about the records falling for Babe Ruth.
Nah, she seemed like a bitter old woman.
Yeah, she did not like her position any longer with the Babe gone and all these guys trying to stamp, you know, step on the Babe's record. He's the Babe. He's not Babe Ruth. He's the Babe. It's like, that's like, it's so ridiculous. I wish I could to just like go back in time and just see in real life, like what he was actually like. That's one of those time travel things that I'd like to do is go back and see Babe Ruth. I think he'd be probably one of, I don't know, maybe three people that I'd like to see play baseball.
Interesting. So if you could go back in time to one baseball era, it would be like the 20s for Ruth?
Yeah, Ruth would definitely be one of them for sure. Because I think he was such a godlike figure at that point and he was so much better than everybody else. And, you know, just he was bigger. He was larger than life. I mean, not even just baseball, but outside baseball. I mean,
he was a mythical figure.
Yeah. So I want to see how much of that is actually accurate, and then how much of that is just, you know, us playing telephone over the years and building it up and looking back on history and relishing on it, because that absolutely happens.
I probably would pick like the early 50s when there were still three teams in New York. And like New York was just the baseball hub of the world with the Yankees, Dodgers, and Giants. They all had superstars, right? The Yankees had DiMaggio and Mantle. The Giants had Willie Mays, and then the Dodgers had Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, that's a lot of superstars on different teams in one city.
So Maris died 6 years before Faye Vincent got rid of the separate record asterisk, which is kind of sad.
That is sad. Such a nice guy.
Christy McQueen at Glass Flippers says, I'm really salty that Roger is not in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, do you think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame?
Probably not. I think some of the records do. I think some of the
his season does, and his bat is there. And I remember something, because the Hall of Fame is a museum. So just because the player is not enshrined in the Hall of Fame doesn't mean something he did shouldn't be. So
no, that's I mean Tyler Austin and Aaron Judge have artifacts in the Hall of Fame from the back-to-back home runs that they had on their debut.
Right. Which is why, though, it annoys me, and I promise this is not going to be another Hall of Fame discussion, but it annoys me that there's players that had way less impact on the game of baseball than Roger Maris who are in the Hall of Fame.
All right, I can't help it, but let me ask you a question. So if Roger Maris was eligible for the Hall of Fame today, right now, would he be a Hall of Famer?
Well, I don't. You mean if like he was playing, if he played over the last 15 years?
Yeah, same stuff. Like same thing happened. But I'm saying like I feel like the criteria has gone down, that it would be a different story for.
No, because because people would have said, he broke the home run record in the middle of the steroid era. Yeah, right. Okay, he's clean. I think if he became re-eligible now, he would get voted in.
That's what I meant. I didn't mean that he would that. Playing in the 90s. I'm talking about if he was eligible for the player that he currently is.
I bet he gets in on the Players Association whenever time comes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of the historic impact.
Well, and also because of all the things that have happened recently. I mean, Jeff Bagwell and I still can't get over it. It's not even said Jeff Bagwell is the biggest one to me. And I don't even want to get into this. It's going to make me go down another rabbit hole. But Craig Biggio is the guy that really pisses me off.
Right. Like, you're telling me Craig Biggio has a more lasting impact on the game of baseball than Roger Maris?
No, it's the hall of really good. It's the hall of really good guys who had good careers.
Bullshit.
That's what it's becoming. And it's diluting the entire meaning of the Hall of Fame. It's pissing me off.
So give me a letter grade for the movie.
Give it a B.
All right.
It's definitely not an A, and so, I don't think it's a C. It's a B. It's a low B.
It's a low B movie, but I think it's a high B, borderline A minus sports movie.
I don't know. I wouldn't put it in my top. I wouldn't even put it in my. I don't know.
Remember, we did the.
It's certainly not in my top five.
The baseball movie March Madness bracket. It lost in the first round to Moneyball, which Moneyball might very well be the best quality baseball movie ever. Might not be your favorite, but it's considered maybe the best quality.
Yeah, I just I think as a Yankees fan, I look at this movie differently than maybe a Cardinals fan.
If
I'm a Cardinals fan who likes baseball and I watch this movie, I feel like I like it more, actually.
Oh, no way.
You weren't going to expect that, right? No because way. Of all of the cheesy things that they said. I think that took away from the movie for me. The beginning of it and like all the cheese and the forced like sentiments that they had inside the movie. To me, that took away from the movie.
That wasn't nostalgic for you?
No. Well, I can't get nostalgic about something I didn't live through. I don't know.
That's true.
I feel like nostalgia is what you remember, right? So, like, I'm going on the history books. I'm going on what I've read and what I've seen and stories that I've heard from other people. So, you know, I know all these things. Like, I know those players very well. I know what they're like. I know from reading this stuff and just from being a Yankees fan for as long as it. So somebody coming out and spelling it all out for me and, like, giving me the exact characterization that's so stereotypical, to me, pisses me off, and it's bothersome. I couldn't get past that in the beginning of the movie. It was pissing me off.
That's an interesting take. That's a little bit of a hot take from you on the movie.
I guess. It was, the Yogi Berra thing really bothered
me. Yeah, that was, Yogi was my least favorite part of the movie. The fact that they just had to force in all those Yogi-isms was definitely annoying.
Yeah, it was really annoying. And, I
think the movie had humor, which I think was a nice added bonus to the movie. And I think that if you just look at like the last half of the movie and the struggles that Maris went through, I thought that it did that really well. And it taught me a lot about what Maris went through that season.
See, I agree with you there. I think the second half of the movie was way better than the beginning of the movie, the first half of the movie. I think after they set up all the nonsense and did all the stuff and they actually got to the plot and they actually started talking about the narrative of Mantle and Maris together, that's when the movie started getting very good. And I did appreciate, you know, the things that I learned with the relationship that the two had and some of the things that they went through. And like, that's the type of thing that I really did appreciate. And I liked, it was the first part of the movie to me that was the slight spoiler, I guess.
Yeah.
It didn't ruin the movie by any means. I mean, I think a B is a pretty good grade for a movie in the first place. But when you're talking about baseball movies and like the top baseball movies, I don't know. I don't think I would put it up. I don't think I would put it up there. And not because of the storyline, but because of the way it was done.
Yeah. Oh, it's not in my top five baseball movies, but
I think Billy Crystal almost missed the mark on it.
Oh, come on. Nah.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah. 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 I'm going
to
go.
You're just jealous because he got to play in spring training.
Yeah. What did he do?
Struck out.
What a bum. What a bum.
I think he did follow a pitch off though.
Yeah. He does not look like any sort of athletic at all.
Well, he was doing this in his late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah, I know. I mean, just when you see Billy Crystal, I mean, he's the least athletic person you could think of. So the fact that he touched the ball, I guess that's good.
All right, I think that'll do it for the movie review. I hope people enjoyed it. The first time we've ever done something like this. What'd you think, Scott?
It was different. It was definitely different. I like talking about.
You were skeptical when I posed this as an idea to you.
Because I didn't know how the hell we were going to talk about this for an hour, to tell you the truth.
But we did it. Look.
Well, usually when we start talking, we just start rambling on and we start going down our own holes. But so, you know, the more I thought about it, came to the realization that we'd be able to get this in. But no, I like it. I think we should do another one or two of these and see how they roll.
Yeah,
I'm interested in the feedback.
Yeah, give us some feedback. If you have an idea in mind, whether it's a Yankees movie, Yankees TV show. I know we talked about maybe doing The Bronx is Burning. You remember that ESPN miniseries?
Yeah.
I watched that once. I'd like to go back and watch that. Maybe we can do a podcast on that. Or any other baseball movie or anything like that. Any ideas you guys have for some extra content. I know in our last episode we talked about the fact that we'll be doing maybe more episodes throughout the week. Still more details to come on that. But we do want to be doing these maybe once a month, twice a month sort of evergreen episodes. They're fun. I had a lot of fun doing this. So tweet us what you guys would like to hear. And coming up on the show, on our next episode, Scott, it's funny. Isn't it funny that we record our show this week and then immediately the Yankees go out and make some moves? Seems to always happen that way.
It does seem to happen that way. With the Chris Carter ad. I know the two of us have a lot of thoughts on what's transpired this week. It seems like all of a sudden baseball got re-energized and like, oh, we're all going to start making moves now. We're going to start
telling
doing
you, all the GMs were like, oh shit, the Super Bowl's over. I gotta start thinking about my team. Brian Cashman went out, made a move. So it's going to be a busy show on Monday. It'll be out on Tuesday. You guys are probably listening to this on Friday over the weekend. So I hope everyone out there is enjoying their weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Where they don't know my last name, I roll through the city with my headphones on, and when the feeling is gone, I'll turn around and go home.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.